members of the court, Adam Bayless, Mr. Brulette, and Ms. Pat Hing, and I'm an attorney with the North Platteville firm of Wayman Law. We represent Krista Sellers, who's appellate in this matter. It's come before the court on a couple of issues, but the major issue, I think, is pretty well-defined. I think the issue of the gift that was made by Mr. Brulette's client, Ryan Sellers, to Krista the day of the marriage, name based on the appeal as well as the evaluation on the cattle operation. These parties have a little unique relationship. They've been married. This is the second time they were married. They were married, I think, between 2005 and 2008. They had a son during that marriage. They got divorced in 2008, and then about a month after that, they got back together and lived together until they got remarried in August of 2010. During that period of time prior to the marriage, Mr. Seller had three separate LLCs, which he owned in the entirety of each one. He, the date of the marriage, conversation between Krista and Ryan, agreed to assign 100% of his interest, or gift 100% of his interest to half him and half Krista, joint rights, right, of survivorship. The trial court, in reviewing that, made a definite decision, definite conclusion that it's an outright gift. It was intended to be a gift. There's not anything other than it was a gift knowingly made by Ryan Sellers. It's reflected on the LLC records. It's further, it was consented to by the pursuant to the operate agreement. So it's just an outright gift made.
Didn't the court also make a specific factual finding that the transfers were made after the marriage itself occurred? Maybe on the day of the marriage, but after the marriage ceremony had taken place.
Yeah, it did. It noted that I think Ryan's testimony was, he thought it was done before. Krista's testimony was before. He believed Krista that it was done after they went to the courthouse and I think went over to the office and made the
After this document was signed, what was the status of the Ryan portion of the LLCs?
Ryan had 50% of the LLC. He had given Krista 50% and then Ryan 50%.
So it was his separate property before the documents? Is that your position?
The Ryan section? Or the Ryan, percentage?
All 100% of the LLCs was Ryan's separate property prior to doing this paperwork.
Correct.
Is that a correct statement in your view?
It would be, yes. It was his.
Okay.
Yes.
After the paperwork, what was the status? 50% went to
Krista.
Her, yep. Which you are characterizing as a gift.
Correct.
And 50% went to him. Did it lose the 50% that went to him? Did it lose its identity as his separate property and become marital property?
We did not take that position.
What happened to his 50%? How do you characterize it?
It's a gift to him, an outright gift to him. I guess it's the way he's...
What do you think?
Pardon?
What do you think happened by virtue of these documents and the testimony?
Based on what I think that, yes, under our state of law, I think he retains that 50%.
He retained it as 50% as his separate property.
I think
I understand that on behalf of the wife that you believe 50% became a gift to her,
right.
And that you agree so far with the trial court's finding to that effect. And now I'm asking you, what happened to the other 50% of the LLC? Did it remain his separate property, not marital property, or by virtue of these documents and the evidence, did that 50% also become a gift to himself?
Well, it becomes a gift to himself, I think, at least from Rascal, I think, whichever way we find it, it's something that once you look at the underlying facts and circumstances, it remains, that 50% remains in his name, not during the marriage or...
So you think it's gifts to both? And both are outside the marital estate. Is that your view? Okay, now if the court was to conclude that, in fact, that by virtue of these documents and the evidence, the 50% to her became marital property.
That's where we
then what would you say as to the documents and the evidence as to the husband's 50%?
Well, if that's going to be the court's decision, and that's a right way to interpret the scenario, then I would agree, I guess you'd have to, on the flip side, say it all comes back in. That's not.
You think this has to go mirror images?
Well, it would have to, then.
Would that leave you in the same place?
Pardon?
Would that leave you in the same place?
No, I think the way, I think where you got to where the judge then includes it in the marital state, where there comes in the next sentence, where it's a generally accepted rule that if you make a gift during marriage, it's part of the marital state. And I don't think that's a generally accepted rule.
Well, I understand your argument is that there's a disconnect between where the judge finds it to be a gift and therefore a part of the marital estate, but I'm working on the first part of the proposition.
Okay. Yeah, if you're going to go to the route that it's the whole thing, you're right, Your Honor, the whole thing would be considered the marital estate if it's a gift to each of them made during marriage.
He's both the donor and the donee, and how does that change the reality of this, of it being his separate property as to that 50%?
Well, under the gift law, I guess it's, looking at the Aaron Farrer case, I guess, it's clear he intends to, I don't think he's thinking of gifting himself, but that's the essence of the documents. It would be, he's making that gift, and it's intended to be a gift to her as well as, I guess, indirectly not even thinking of, but yeah, it's a gift to himself as well, on both sides of the equation, I guess. I don't know the answer to that.
How do you want this to come out?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that
on the LLCs.
On the LLC is that her 50% should be treated outside, it's not part of the marital estate. It shouldn't have been brought back into the marital estate and then cut in half and given the net result leaving her 25% of the LLC. I think there are exceptions to that rule regarding a gift within the marriage, but they're not present or the evidence doesn't display that in this case. So for purposes of how it should go, she should have half that value of that LLC. I
mean, as a gift, not part of the marital estate.
As a gift, that's outside the marital estate.
Okay. Thank you.
Suppose the transfer had been transferred to himself, but transfer on death to her. Net result would be exactly the same as for estate planning purposes, as a joint tenancy. But based on that formulation, would you be claiming that there was any change in the separate character of the property?
If he gave himself a life estate, essentially, is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm saying if he retained the ownership but created a transfer on death provision.
Well, that wouldn't, I mean, from my standpoint, I guess it could be as a divorce, isn't it? You know, the estate planning argument is made. I think the court rejected it in its opinion. But
under my scenario, would that be still his separate property, 100%?
In that scenario, I would have to argue he kept it in his name, to the extent that she had any interest, is only upon his death. So, I guess.
So bad divorce planning here would be the.
Well, I think. The appellee is asking the court to undo a voluntary known decision he makes. I mean, he makes the decision, I'm going to gift this to her, and then he tries to come back and make the argument, well, that's all premarital. I, in essence, gifted zero. And that's not, and the judge said he didn't do that. The problem, I think, where the judge erred is including that outright gift back in the marital estate, and that's not, I don't think, how the equation worked. I think you've got to find the exception within that gifting provision that the court has set forth. That's not present.
If we were talking about a bank account and he did exactly the same thing and he had contributed all of the money that was in the bank account, wouldn't the bank account be his separate property irregardless of that creation of the joint tenancy?
If he transferred half of it to her, or did the...
If he simply... He's got the bank account. It's got X dollars. He put all the money in.
Correct.
He goes to the bank and says, put her name on. She's now a joint tenant.
Okay.
Bank account context, it still all would be his money, wouldn't it?
Well, I think if you look at some of the other decisions after the Lay case, you know, then I think you look out title. Title's kind of irrelevant. You look at the underlying circumstances. I think what you have here is you have that underlying circumstance. He makes a conscious decision, I'm gifting this. And does the paperwork within the LLC, does everything you need to do that. He did that with that bank account, I guess, saying it's in the LLC, I'm going to transfer half of it. The value to her through this gift, we're going to go through all the rigmarole of the LLC operating agreement and say yes, yeah, I would agree if you split this. Thank you.
Mr. Brulette, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Tim Brulette, Mr. Hank. My name is Tim Brulette. I represented the defendant appellee in this action, Ryan Sellers. This case is affectionately known as the things we do for love in my office because it certainly is something that I think shows why this court and the district courts are vested with powers of equity because this is a case that I think certainly needed equity's injection in order to come to a rational and reasonable result. Mr. Hang had indicated that Mr. Sellers had transferred joint ownership with Rider Survivorship, his interest in three different LLCs. The testimony and trial and record reflect that these LLCs are all contain premarital property. Some real estate, some businesses, I think there was a car, used car, lot, there was a pawn shop. That was all a part of it. I think the plaintiff, appellant, had also agreed at trial that these were all premarital assets. Your Honor, the testimony at trial is a little unclear as to why. I know the court made a decision that this gift was made during the marriage, and certainly we had a cross appeal on this matter too, and one of the basis of our cross appeal was the presumption, I think, that the court made that the transfer was a gift of at least 50%. I think that this court in the Schumann case had overruled or at least had distinguished itself from a Gerard Lay case, which was a court of appeals case, that said there's no presumptions of gifts in the marriage. I think the appellant's argument is that because a gift was made, that should be her separate property, and then we divide the rest. And what I ask this court is, what if he, because of this law, because of this everlasting marriage, said, I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to put those LLCs in all your name. Would that be a just result then to say, all right, too late, you can't have it back, sorry, 3.5 years later, you're divorced now, but the court made a mistake under the...
Well, when you're talking about equity here, there's really a much longer history than the second marriage. They lived together as if they were married for a period of time, and they were actually married before. So, is it unequitable where the court ended up here?
Your Honor, I think that from our standpoint, I don't know that it may be unequitable, except when you take into account the first marriage, which is part of the record, in which he received these LLCs out of the marriage, out of the property split, which was done by agreement. Then again, to lose them in the second marriage, I'm not sure that that would be equitable. You know, our argument in our brief is that the marital property division should be closer to $50,000, whereby the court, I think, the total was closer to $200,000. Now, we did, as I argued in the brief, we did mention the court. The first marriage, which is part of the record also, I think, was about 4 years. Second marriage was 3.5 before the filing. But the court, the district court decided that, hey, I'm going to count 50% of these LLCs as marital property. I think we argued in our brief, too, that even if this court accepts that decision, there was a $110,000 debt that was completely ignored during the marriage. It wasn't that was presented to a trial. There was exhibits at trial. Which would reduce that.
Counsel, just saying, did you say that debt was incurred during the marriage?
No, it wasn't. It was okay. A premarital debt.
Okay. Doesn't the same principle apply to debt as it would to assets if it's premarital, but it's not included?
I would agree 100% with that.
Okay, then why are you arguing on appeal that that's an error by the court to not include
it? I think if the court's going to accept the district court's determination that a premarital asset, that being the LLC, is going to be considered marital, then they also, and the court did include some of the premarital debt to offset to come up with an equity position on that LLC.
But he didn't gift, so to speak, 50% of the debt.
No,
he
and
gifted
I
50, or he gifted 50% of the LLC. So, it's, aren't we talking apples and oranges then?
No, I don't believe so, because I think when he gifted 50% of the LLC, it was subject to the debt. The LLC had the debt going.
Is your argument that the is this the Gifford debt on the Colonial LLC?
Yes.
And that's a, so to speak, a hereditament of that LLC. You get the LLC, you get its debt? Is that what you want?
That would be my argument. I don't believe that would be the correct decision. I think the correct decision would be to decide that LLC, including all the debt, is premarital property of Mr. Sellers, which would come up with a property division of about $50,000. But if this court's going to accept the district court's position in giving that premarital LLC 50%, then they ought to take 50% of all the debt. And then that's, but our initial...
The other LLC debt went into the marital estate.
I'm sorry?
Other debt went into the marital estate.
And I would agree. Other premarital debt of the LLCs went into the marital estate. There were bank loans. There were other things that were part of the debt that I think the evidence at trial was the debt, and it was called a Gifford loan of $110,000, was when Mr. Sellers, premarital, had purchased another interest of another LLC partner and then had that debt for the payment of the interest. And one of the things that I think that the court needs to recognize and was also in the record is that Mr. Sellers has had these, building these investments up since 1984, which I believe is when he initially had the testimony reflects the brand for the cattle in his own name. And that was another issue that came up. I believe Mr. Hang in his brief was about the substantial improvements, because the district court, I would agree with this assessment, the district court said that on the cattle that there was no substantial contributions that were made to the cattle, and as a result that all became premarital property. And that's consistent with the Newkirk decision of this court, saying that it can't be more than just showing up at a branding or sporadic showing up in order to give substantial contributions. In addition, cattle is very difficult to trace on premarital, and I believe there was a Schaefer case, which is a court of appeals case that talks about, we understand the nature of cattle, you can't trace cattle, especially in the branding area of western Nebraska, but this is that case in the court of appeals was a 13 and a half year marriage, and this is a 3.5 year marriage. Yeah, there was a previous marriage, and yeah, there was a period of time where they spent time together between the marriages, but Nebraska doesn't have common law marriage. So I know that that's an argument, but I think that if the court looks back at how long, and the record reflects when all of these properties were deeded into these LLCs, how long before the first marriage most of this property was acquired by the defendant, Appley, I think equity would require that his premarital LLCs, whether it's an intended gift or not, I'm not asking. I think that Mr. Hang's client, if they weren't married and he made this gift, I don't think there is a possibility that it could have been taken back. But under the equities of the situation, the fact that everybody, when they get married, thinks it's forever, this is no different from a bank account and joint tenancy with right of survivorship. There's several cases of real estate being placed during a marriage and joint tenancy with right of survivorship. The court recognizes that property needs to be offset back to the party who brought it into the marriage. That's what I'm asking the court to do here. But the other argument is, if the court's going to accept the rationale that the district court gave by considering half of the interest of this LLC to be a marital interest, then to take that one debt which was omitted, which arguably is premarital, just like the LLC interest, and reduce that judgment by, I think it was $27,000, as indicated in our brief. Otherwise,
would that be a fourth of the debt?
It'd be a fourth of the net. That's correct.
Or, yeah, the debt.
And then, otherwise, we'd ask this court to make a decision based upon the record that the only marital interest in the property is, as argued in the brief, there are certain sections of the property statement, and that the award of the judgment that the defendant appellee owes to the plaintiff as a marital split be in the neighborhood of $15,000, which is what we...
Let me ask you something about the language of the assignment.
Yes.
And in the fourth paragraph, it refers to the assignment and says that the transferor, husband, hereby gifts, assigns, transfers, conveys, and delivers to transferees, plural, all of his 100% ownership interest in, and it names the LLC as follows, and then sets forth transferee, husband, 50%, joint tenant with right of survivorship, and wife, and then wife as joint tenant with right of survivorship and husband. Right. So what do you think is the legal significance of that? Did his 100% separate property change in any way by virtue of this language?
I don't think it would. I know that, I mean, other than, I think it's very difficult to conclude that the intention of a gift is giving something to yourself. I know it may not have been artfully drafted in that respect, but I think the intention is clear that he intended on giving a 50% interest to his spouse as joint tenants with right of survivorship and retain the 50% interest in himself with joint tenants and right of survivorship. So I think the entirety LLC, 100% of the interest was owned with the husband and wife as joint tenants with right of survivorship. So, and I think that was the intent. But again, I think that, you know, in equity, and there's no presumption that that gift should be set aside as non-marital property, so I still think it would be considered, there's no presumption that it's a gift, and I still think that the equities of the situation require that the premarital property be given back to the defendant appellee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Martin versus Martin. Mr. Catlett, good morning to you again.